Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. It's your girl Holly, and I am back today with another solved murder case for you all. Make sure that you guys are in my private Facebook group because I want to know your thoughts on today's case. It brings up a great question on whether teens or kids should be held accountable for murders the way adults are held accountable. Today's case is pretty wild for the fact that 3 people were murdered by 2 young men, yet one of them is walking free as of January 2024. And honestly, I haven't seen many people talk about this case. I haven't seen a ton of creators beyond like a small handful of creators that have talked about this case. I know that when I stumbled upon it, it was the first time that I had ever heard about it. So I'm really excited to bring you guys a little bit of a lesser known case. I do have a quick case update for the Christian Obomsele case. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, make sure that you do so. Christian was fatally stabbed by his girlfriend, OnlyFans model Courtney Clenny, in Miami, Florida. A judge has finally set the trial date to begin, and that is going to start happening on December 1st. I will, of course, be watching that trial very closely, and I will keep you guys updated on the happenings with all of that, so make sure that you stay tuned. Lastly, before we dive into the details of today's case, I do want to give a shout out and a warm welcome to my 3 new Patreon members, BJ, Kelsey, and Courtney. The 3 of them signed up this week to get every single episode ad-free for just $2 a month. You can be like them and sign up at www.patreon.com/crimewithholly. Thank you so much, BJ, Kelsey, and Courtney. I am so happy to have you guys as a part of my little true crime family. All right, so without further ado, let's get into the details of the Pizza Hut murders. January 17th, 1999 was a big day in Tucson, Arizona. NASCAR fans went out to the Tucson Raceway Park or circled around their TVs to watch a NASCAR Winston West Series race. This race consisted of 28 drivers racing 200 laps around an oval track, covering a total distance of 75 miles. Sean Woodside led the majority of those laps in his number 16 Chevrolet, securing himself over a $10,000 win. Across town at a Pizza Hut located off Pantano and Broadway, 44-year-old Robert Curry, who was the restaurant's manager, 20-year-old Melissa Monez, who went by the name Lisa, and 17-year-old James Bluxom were all working the closing shift. And because I try to give the most details about the victims that I can, I'm just going to tell you briefly about them. Robert Curry was described as being jolly, kind, generous, and someone who had an incredible sense of humor. At his memorial, his son Josh had everyone laughing when he talked about his father's love for ketchup. Apparently, Robert was so in love with ketchup that he would put it just about on everything, ranging from green beans to barbecued beef, and they had to buy a new bottle of ketchup weekly because Robert would go through it so fast. I am not sure how I feel about ketchup on green beans, but I might have to try it out sometime in honor of Robert. It's also said that Robert would put ketchup on his pizza. That one I don't think I'm going to try. Lisa was described as being wise and warm-hearted. She was a very vibrant and loving person. Her mother, Diane, said that she lived golden and was the kindest and sweetest person ever. Lisa was the type of person that always wanted to help others, and she would give you the shirt off of her back if you were in need. She had a love for horses and was very hardworking and started working at the age of 15. And then James Bluxom, the youngest victim, was 17 years old and was just a day, one single day, away from his 18th birthday, which every kid is looking forward to the day that they officially become an adult. He was known to be a gentle soul and a kind, likable, and compassionate young man. He also was described as being someone who was always ready to help others. James was someone who would befriend the local homeless people and would give them food that was left over at the end of the day. He loved animals and was studying aeronautics and wanted to get a job at an air park while he completed his schooling. James had dreams of working on airplanes for his future career and was well on his way of making it happen. Unfortunately, these three beautiful people were taken from this world in a senseless and violent attack. And the reasons behind these murders really is still a mystery. As I mentioned, these three were working the closing shift, and the restaurant would close up around 10 p.m., and they would be finished cleaning up around 11 o'clock or so. When Lisa would be working the closing shift, her boyfriend Michael Orban would be the one to pick her up from work. On the night of January 17, 1999, Michael did just that. He arrived outside of the Pizza Hut around 11 p.m., waiting for Lisa to wrap up her shift and do the final closing routine. Usually, by the time he got there, she was about done, and so he never really waited long for her to come out to the car. On this particular night, though, he sat there for minutes, and she never came out. He figured at first things were going a bit later than normal, and he continued to wait. But as he sat in his car looking at the Pizza Hut, he didn't see anyone through the windows moving about like he typically would. Inside the restaurant, instead, was eerily quiet, and that did not sit well with him. He had this gut feeling that something was wrong, and so he got out of the car and approached the restaurant. When he walked inside, he found something that he never expected. Lying on the ground was his girlfriend Lisa, covered in blood. She was still alive and was spitting up blood, gasping for air. Michael freaked out, not knowing what had happened, who had done this to his girlfriend, and if that person was still inside of the Pizza Hut. He turned to run out the door to go over to the Circle K next door to call 911. And when he did, this is when he spotted Robert and James lying in pools of blood near the cash register, and it was very obvious that they were deceased. Michael ran as fast as he could over to the Circle K and called 911, and they quickly responded. Paramedics were first on scene, and typical protocol here would be that the police would get there, clear the building, and then paramedics could go in. But paramedics were on scene first, and they were brave and went inside to administer aid to Lisa, who was still clinging to life. Thankfully, the restaurant was empty, and whoever did this had already fled. And they were able to get Lisa out of the building and into the ambulance, where she was then rushed to the hospital. When police arrived just minutes later, they entered the building and found that Robert Curry had three gunshot wounds. Robert had been shot in the head, chest, and neck. It was stated that Robert had bled out and that it had taken anywhere from 5 to 20 minutes for him to pass away. I can imagine that Robert laid there unable to do anything, terrified as he slowly bled out. That kind of slow and agonizing death is unfathomable. And he was likely conscious for a decent amount of time, fully aware of the severity of it all. James also suffered several gunshot wounds to his head, chest, abdomen, and left leg. Bullets had passed through his lungs as well as the middle of his brain. It is believed that James likely died immediately or within 3 to 4 minutes after being shot. Police taped off the scene and began trying to figure out what exactly happened and who did this and why. They noted that overall the restaurant was clean, but they did notice that there was one singular table that was dirty from whoever ate there last. It was covered with silverware, plates, and used napkins. And this led the authorities to wonder if maybe whoever ate there last was responsible for this crime, or maybe it had happened shortly after they left. And with the state of the rest of the restaurant being cleaned up and ready for closing, they believe that whoever ate there did so up until closing at 10 p.m. Detectives found bullets, bullet fragments, and shell casings throughout the entire restaurant. Many, many, many shots were fired. And they even found that there was a bullet that got lodged in the gumball machine across the restaurant. Whoever did this made it rain with bullets. One shell casing was found near the east entrance of the Pizza Hut outside the wait station. There were bullets that hit the cash register. Literally all over the place was shot up. And the criminalist that was brought in, named Lucian Hagg, he had stated that from the placement of the shell casings and where bullets had struck in the different parts of the restaurant, it was determined that the shots had been fired from the area of the restrooms and traveled across the restaurant towards the front. What came as a surprise for the authorities was that this did not appear to be a robbery gone wrong necessarily. It didn't appear that any large amounts of money had been taken from the Pizza Hut. The safe wasn't tampered with, the cash register had been left untouched with money inside, and Robert had died with $358 inside of his pocket. So the authorities were stumped. What the heck was the motive here? If money wasn't the motive, then why did these three innocent lives get taken? 2 hours after being rushed to the hospital, Lisa was pronounced dead. Doctors did everything that they could to try and save her, but the damage was too severe. Lisa had suffered from gunshot wounds to her head, neck, and her right arm and hand. Investigators worked through the night trying to find any evidence or clues left behind. And when all of Tucson woke up the following morning, they were shocked to hear of such a senseless and violent attack. They were all wondering who could have done this and why. And thankfully for everyone, they didn't have to wait long.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Does your employer pay for training or education that could help you in your job today? Then, IT folks, this is for you. CBT Nuggets offers online IT training that's affordable and, dare we say, fun. From networking and cybersecurity to data science, CBT Nuggets has the training to get you through the workday. With our courses, you'll build real-world skills with short, engaging videos, hands-on virtual labs, and quiz questions to test what you've learned. Go to cbtnuggets.com and check it out. Our online platform launches right in your browser. No expensive hardware or software is needed to start. The best part? You can watch and learn at your own pace, on your schedule. cbtnuggets.com. It's IT training for all levels. From beginner-level courses to advanced network training, our expert instructors give you information that's informative, meaningful, and engaging. We've been helping learners for over 25 years, and we're a trusted name in IT training. So tell your boss it's time for CBT Nuggets IT training. Go to cbtnuggets.com and get started today.
On January 18, 1999, after three people had been discovered murdered the night before inside a popular Pizza Hut restaurant, the community of Tucson, Arizona was grieving the loss of three beautiful lives. Police were working overtime to track down any and all leads, and for the most part, they were struggling to find anyone who saw or heard anything. But late on that Monday morning, a phone call came in from a man named Josh Simmons. On the night before, into the early morning hours of the 18th, he had been with two individuals who straight up confessed about murdering three people. He said that 17-year-old Christopher Herstal told him that he and 19-year-old Tom Proserpong were involved in the Pizza Hut murders. According to Josh, Christopher told him that he and Tom had originally gone to the Pizza Hut with the intent to rob the restaurant. He bragged to Josh that he first shot Lisa in the neck and then continued towards the back of the restaurant. Christopher said that when he came back out towards the front, he found Tom with his hands around Lisa's neck, trying to break her neck because she was still alive. Which, that is so disgusting and incredibly personal. To break someone's neck like that is just so violent and evil, in my opinion. And not to mention, it's not an easy thing to do and requires a lot of force. And clearly, he was unable to do so because when Michael found her, she was still clinging to life. Josh said that Christopher didn't mention shooting Robert or James when detailing what happened at that Pizza Hut, but it was very clear that he was proud and almost bragging that he committed this crime. As soon as Josh was alone and away from Christopher and Tom, he immediately called the police to report what he had been told. And thank God for that. Josh might have surrounded himself with some real dirtbags, but at least he wasn't a dirtbag himself, and he came forward with this information. Josh also told police where they could locate Christopher and Tom. And the authorities found both men standing outside of Tom's truck, and they were arrested without any issues. They were taken down to the Tucson Police Department for questioning, and both young men were placed in separate interrogation rooms, and the questioning began. Police started with Christopher first, since he was the one that was dishing all the details to Josh, and his interview was audio recorded. Detective Olivas and Detective Charlton went in, and Christopher denied any involvement in the murders. He said he didn't do it. He said that he hadn't even been to the Pizza Hut at all the night before. And he denied everything they asked and was not cooperative at all. So they moved on and went in to talk to Tom. And his interview was also recorded. Now, Tom was actually from Thailand and was a Thai citizen living in the United States. They found that Tom had been there for about 11 years, give or take. And so that came with its own set of hurdles and special things that they had to do to make sure that they weren't infringing upon Tom's rights. They had to make sure that he fully understood English before questioning him, and he said that he did speak fluent English. Tom was read his Miranda rights, and he agreed to be questioned. Tom did not hold back either. He completely, 100% fully confessed to everything, unlike Christopher. According to Tom, he and Christopher decided that they wanted to go eat at the Pizza Hut because they were craving wings. Tom picked up Christopher in his 1995 Nissan pickup truck, and then they went to go eat. Tom made sure to let the authorities know that he also was one to keep a Glock 22 40 caliber gun in his truck at all times. According to Tom, while eating and chatting, somehow the idea got brought up to rob the Pizza Hut. There were a few sources that mentioned something about Tom not having his wallet or his debit card, so he didn't know how they were going to pay for their meal. But I'm not 100% sure on that little detail because it wasn't mentioned quite like that in the appeals documents that I read. But it does seem like that was their thought process at first due to other statements that Tom will make, which I will get into in a second. I'm not sure how they came to the conclusion that robbing the Pizza Hut was the best idea since they didn't have a way to pay for their meal. Most people would think to dine and dash or say they'll come back later to pay the bill. But apparently these two thought that robbing the place would be the better bet. So during their conversation, Tom said that they decided against robbing the place. They decided they didn't want to do that because Tom had found his debit card. And again, the mention of having a debit card makes me believe that robbing the place because they didn't have money to pay for their bill was the motive for this original idea. Tom also said that he didn't want to rob the place because there was a female in the building and he didn't want to do something like that with a woman present. According to Tom, while they were talking about all of this, Christopher admitted that he had brought Tom's gun inside of the Pizza Hut with him. When they were finished eating, Tom approached the cash register to pay for their meals while Christopher headed off towards the bathroom. Tom said that while the receipt was printing out, Christopher came out of the bathroom, quote, going crazy, with Tom's gun shooting Lisa first. Tom said that Christopher then turned to Robert Curry, who was asking them what they wanted, and Christopher asked, quote, where's the safe? Before Robert could even get an answer out to that question, Christopher shot him 3 times. Robert had been holding a bank deposit bag that came out of his hand as he fell to the ground where he would eventually bleed out. Christopher spotted James running towards the back of the restaurant trying to flee, and Tom said that Christopher, quote, took him out too. Tom said it was during this time that he noticed that Lisa was still alive and was crawling up on her knees. Tom wanted to make sure that she was dead. I'm assuming he thought maybe she would identify them or something, and he didn't want to get into trouble. Tom claims that he grabbed Lisa by the hair, looked her in the eyes, and attempted to snap her neck. When he couldn't, Christopher came back to the front of the restaurant and shot Lisa 1 more time in the head. Before fleeing the restaurant, Tom grabbed the debit card machine as well as the bank bag that Robert had dropped. It seems like Tom was under the impression that if they took this debit card machine, then police wouldn't be able to identify who ate at the restaurant last or something along those lines. From my understanding, they didn't think that they would benefit any kind of way from stealing this and more so did it to cover their tracks. They ended up throwing the debit card machine in a wash, and they also burned the bank bag when they realized that it didn't hold any money at all. The only thing that bank bag held were written checks that the restaurant had received for that night. So if this was a robbery, they did a really crappy job. They didn't touch the safe. The cash register was left untouched. They didn't get any money from the bank bag. And this entire thing was just not well thought out or planned if this truly was a robbery gone wrong. After that, Tom said that he put the gun, the gun's extra magazine, a pair of gloves, and several pieces of identification, including his debit card and driver's license, into a bag that he hid inside the wheel well of the spare tire underneath the truck. This was his attempt to cover his tracks. The two men then went to Aaron's billiard in what it seems like an attempt to create an alibi. While there, Tom called the police to report that his truck had been broken into and that personal items, including his debit card and identification cards, were missing. Again, I think this was an attempt to cover tracks. If somehow the police found out that the card had been used at the Pizza Hut, Tom could say, "No, I had reported it missing, and it wasn't me. I was at Aaron Billiards." After filing the false police report, Tom and Christopher went over to a friend's house to stay the night. And when they got there, Josh Simmons and another friend were asleep. Josh eventually woke up, learned about what had happened, and then called the police, as we know. When the detectives were done interviewing and getting a full confession from Tom, they went over to Christopher and told him that Tom confessed. They played a small portion of a clip of Tom confessing to show Christopher that they weren't bluffing and that he needed to come clean, which he did. Of course, Christopher's version of events were similar to what Tom said, but he claimed to be the one who wasn't really involved. So both men were pointing the finger at each other. They both blamed the other one for coming out of the bathroom and firing all the shots. But when asked, neither of them really had a reason for the murders. Sure, they mentioned robbery, but they easily could have robbed the place and left everyone inside alive. It was just so senseless and so unnecessary for them to take those three innocent lives, especially if they really didn't gain anything monetary-wise from this crime. It seems like they were just killing to kill. And that was something that the community had a hard time wrapping their heads around. These were two young men. Christopher was still in high school and Tom was only 19. How could someone so young do such a horrific thing? And honestly, those are questions that people still have today, 26 years later. This murder really shook Tucson to its core, and this specific area of Tucson was considered a good and safe area. It had people questioning everything. It was decided that Christopher Hurstall would be tried as an adult, and that he and Tom would be tried together, but they each would have their own separate jury. This is called a dual jury trial, and it's pretty uncommon, but not completely unheard of. So let me just explain and talk about this a little bit. A dual jury sounds kind of complicated, but it really is pretty simple. Normally, one jury hears a case, but sometimes two people are on trial together, and the evidence isn't the same for both of them. For example, there might be something the jury is allowed to hear for one defendant, but legally can't hear about the other. Instead of running two separate trials, the court brings in two juries at the same time, one for each defendant. Both juries sit in the courtroom, but if a piece of evidence only applies to one person, the other jury gets taken out so that they don't hear that information. It's basically a way to save time and resources while still protecting each defendant's rights to a fair trial. So dual jury trials usually happen when two people are accused of the same crime, but the evidence that can be used against them isn't identical. Again, dual jury trials are pretty uncommon, but not completely unheard of. Since this case at the time got a ton of media attention and many people were talking about the case, they decided to move the trial to Prescott, Arizona to ensure they received a fair trial, and it began on August 24th, 2000. At the trial, it came out that DNA testing was done on the items left at that dirty booth. It was confirmed that both Christopher and Tom's DNA matched DNA on forks and napkins left at the table. The entire trial was pretty much both men pointing the finger at each other and blaming the other for shooting the gun. And I'm not sure if DNA testing of the gun was ever done. That information wasn't in any of the documents and the articles that I read. During the trial, Tom stuck to his story that Christopher came out of the bathroom and began firing. And he did admit that he had attempted to snap Lisa's neck. Christopher, on the other hand, claimed that he was completely innocent, and it was Tom that began firing at people like crazy while he himself was in the bathroom, and when Christopher allegedly walked out of the bathroom, he saw all three victims had already been shot, and he also said that he found Tom with his hands around Lisa's neck. Again, this is a lot of he said, she said. And I personally do not believe this version of events from Christopher. This was coming from a man who originally told police he wasn't even at the Pizza Hut that night. This is the man who was bragging to Josh Simmons about what he and Tom had done, and now Christopher is trying to sing a different tune. Not to mention, it was originally found that the bullets had been shot from the bathroom area out towards the restaurant, which again doesn't line up with Christopher's story. Christopher said he was in the bathroom. It was Tom in the restaurant that shot everybody. So did Tom walk towards the bathroom, turn around and shoot everybody? I don't know. It just does not line up. If you ask me, I think he was just trying to save face and do whatever and say whatever he could to make it seem like he was innocent in all of this. It doesn't matter though, because both men were found guilty of first degree murder and they both were sentenced to death. Now, that death sentence was only for Lisa and James. The family of Robert Curry asked that the death penalty not be pursued for his particular death. They said that Robert wasn't the type of person that would have wanted that, and he was just this loving and kind person with a real zest for life. They felt like the death penalty for James and Lisa was enough, and the prosecution instead went for life without the possibility of parole for Robert's death, which they ended up getting. Tom Prosser-Pong was also sentenced to 3 concurrent terms of 21 years in prison for 3 armed robbery charges he received because he stole the debit card machine and the bank bag. And while it feels like for everybody this would be the end of the story since justice has been served, that is not the case. In 2003, Christopher's conviction and sentence were overturned. KOLD 13 News reported that the Arizona Supreme Court ruled that the judge coerced the jury into a premature verdict. The Supreme Court upheld the verdict for Tom since he was convicted by a different jury. This means that Christopher had another chance in court. And this time, after nearly 3 days of deliberations, the jury found him not guilty on 3 counts of first-degree murder and 3 counts of armed robbery. And they had a hung jury for second-degree murder. The families of the victims were so, so angry, and the father of James Bluxom said, quote, "This is what we feared. There were 4 confessions. How could they possibly think that he did not commit the crime? And the confession was by his own voice. It came out of his own mouth," end quote. Even though Tom's convictions were upheld because he was sentenced by a different jury, he did get a resentencing hearing in 2006 because his sentence was overturned by the Supreme Court's decision involving the death penalty. Ultimately, the death penalty was dropped and Tom received life in prison. Tom tried to fight this, saying that his rights were violated when police searched his truck without a warrant. I guess at one point or another, the truck was searched without a warrant because when it was originally taken to the station, the truck did not have working locks on it, and the police were worried that someone would tamper with something inside, so they just did a quick search, but nothing was found. However, a thorough and proper search was done after Tom confessed where he hid the murder weapon. Ultimately, this argument did not go in Tom's favor. He also tried to say that police forced him to confess and made threats, but obviously that's not the case at all. In 2007, the third trial for Christopher began. Every day, the victims' families and loved ones filled the courtroom, and let me just say how tragic that is. It's bad enough families have to sit through one initial trial, but to sit through 3 is crazy. These people have gone through so much, yet every single day they showed up to make sure that their loved one got justice. And I admire the heck out of them for sitting through these horrific details over and over and over again. In a shocking turn of events, Christopher was offered a plea deal. If he pled guilty to second-degree murder, he would be given a 25-year sentence. At this point, Christopher had already served 8 years, And so if he took the plea deal, he would only have to do another 17, and then he would be free. He agreed to take the plea deal, and as of January 12th, 2024, Christopher Herstal is out and living his life. And that blows my mind. I will say that there are articles that talk about both men. Christopher is described in one as being a teen who was a high school junior that had a large group of friends who were known to be passive and easily manipulated. While Tom, on the other hand, dropped out of high school, always carried a gun, and was known to brag about the Thai mafia and killing people. Seems like it was spun to sound like Tom influenced Christopher to participate in this, and honestly, I don't think we will ever really truly know the truth. I feel like Christopher bragging about what he did to Josh Simmons aligns with maybe he was the one that came out of the bathroom and started shooting. But on the other hand, he was a young teen that has been described as easily manipulated and easily influenced. I don't think we will ever really know the truth. Both men maintain that the other was the shooter, that the other was the one that had the idea. And there were 5 people in that building that night, and 3 of them can no longer tell their story. And obviously, both of these men aren't going to tell the truth either. The judge over this case seems to believe that Tom was the main mastermind here and has been very verbal about the fact that Tom should never get out of prison. He should never be allowed parole and that he deserves to spend the rest of his life behind bars. Detectives that worked on this case have also spoken out saying that they don't believe Christopher should be let out and that he will likely reoffend. I really feel for the families in this situation. From what I've gathered, they all still live in Tucson and pass the location daily where 3 beautiful lives were taken. And for them to know that someone that was responsible, someone who was out there bragging hours after the fact, is now out there free to do whatever he wants and wishes, I can't comprehend what that feels like. I hope for their sake that Christopher moved far, far away from Tucson. I didn't really find much information after his release, so I can only hope that he's out there and has turned his life around and is making something of himself that will go on to leave this world a better place. I'm going to say that I doubt it, but people do change, and I hope that he feels tremendous guilt and remorse for what he did. He never showed any remorse in the courtroom, and he has never publicly apologized that I found. So I do hope that he has changed for the sake of everyone who is near him and come into contact with him. The Pizza Hut has since been torn down and was done so shortly after the murders, and has been replaced with a shopping plaza. I do want to highlight something that I found pretty amazing about the Pizza Hut Corporation as a whole. When this tragedy happened, the company immediately reached out to the families of the victims to offer support and condolences. According to Tucson.com, they covered all funeral expenses and raised funds so that family members could attend the murder trial in Prescott. Brent Kite, the board chairman of Pizza Hut of Arizona, even attended Christopher and Tom's trial. And 10 years after the murders, Pizza Hut presented a $25,000 check in memory of Robert, James, and Lisa to the Homicide Survivors Organization. This organization helps grieving families from the day that a murder occurs and all through the court hearings and trials. And this organization also helped the families of Robert, James, and Lisa. I think the fact that Pizza Hut was so willing to step up and help however they could and to continue to honor these 3 with this large donation is incredible. Makes me want to go and order Pizza Hut for dinner tonight. If you guys want to learn more about this organization or even donate to them, you can visit www.azhomicidesurvivors.org. I will also have the link in the description of this episode. So this brings me to the question of whether teens should be allowed to receive the death penalty. Obviously, we know that Christopher's death sentence was overturned, but I am curious on whether you think that children under the age of 18 should be allowed to be given the death sentence for unspeakable crimes. Do you think someone under the age of 18 should be tried as an adult? I know that this is a heavily debated topic for many people, and I would love to hear your thoughts. So make sure that you are in my private Facebook group so you can hop in on the chats. From everything I saw reported, the families are devastated that Christopher is out walking free. And Robert's sister Kathy said something in an interview that I just wanted to leave out there for everyone to think about. Kathy talked about how drawn out the legal process is and how it shaped her view of the death penalty as a whole. She said, quote, "It pretty much consumed my life for 8 years. The loss of losing someone is horrendous, but what the court system can do to you is even worse. Because it all comes down to the rights of the defendant. It's sad the amount of resources that we put in on the back end for these people, as opposed to putting it on the front end to prevent these things from happening." End quote. She is quoted another time saying, quote, "We don't have a justice system, we have a legal system. When you have a criminal case, it becomes all about the accused and the victims become evidence." End quote. Kathy also talks about the ripple effect all of this has had on many lives, and not just the ones that were taken. Her other brother died from a heart attack not long after Robert lost his life, and not long after he learned full details about what went on inside of that Pizza Hut. Lisa's mother also died a few years later from cancer, very close to the anniversary of the murders. When Kathy was asked if she could ever forgive Tom or Christopher, she said that since everything happened, Tom Proserpong was the only one who spoke directly to them. He told them that he did a lot of bad things that night and how truly sorry he was. He asked Kathy and the rest of Robert's family for forgiveness, and Kathy said that she has forgiven him. Christopher, on the other hand, has never shown remorse. He never apologized to Kathy or any of the other victims' families, and he was often seen smiling inside of the courtroom. And that just pisses me off for the families to be in the courtroom mourning the loss of their loved one, and they're forced to see the person responsible sitting there smiling like he has no care in the world. This case is so tragic and so senseless. Murder as a whole is just devastating, but something about this case with three innocent people who were just at work really hits hard. My heart goes out to all of their families. Robert, Lisa, and James deserved so much more than they got. Crimesters, that is all of the details that I have for this week's case. If you're not already in my private Facebook group, you can find it by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. In there, I share all information and pictures pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also encourage all members to share all things true crime. I love the opportunity to chat with you guys about different cases that are happening and even older cases that went on in the past. So please join, add your friends, let's connect. If you want to follow me over on Instagram and keep up with what I've got going on in life, I would love that. You can find me at Crimeaholly. I share a ton of crime stuff, but I also share my day-to-day life as well. That is all, guys. I will be back next week with another new episode. This time, I have an interview with an amazing person within the true crime community, so you won't want to miss it. Until next time, be aware and take care. Bye-bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
When it comes to home insurance, Geico works for you. And since I'm the Geico Gecko, I work for you too.
Hey, Gecko, could you DJ my workout?
I got you, Derek. I know you like them sweet beats on leg day. Great home gym, by the way.
That's fire, Gecko.
I call this remix. Bundle your home and car insurance so you can save and get coverage that grows with you.
Oh, yeah. Rolls right off the tongue. And you know what else I like?
Air horn.
Oh, yeah.
Let Geico work for you. Get more with Geico.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.